Board will come to order. Good morning. It is still morning. This is the 1,335th meeting of the Board of Directors for November 20th, 2008. Our first item is public comment, and I understand we have one speaker?
That's correct.
All right. The first speaker, I believe, is, I'm sorry, could you give me the read?
Sure. Corey Sianski.
Mr. Sianski, good morning.
Good morning, Chairman Zimmerman, board members. My name is Corey Sianski, and...
Is the microphone on, Mr. Good?
My name is Corey Sianski, and I'm a regular writer of Metrorail. I live in Gaithersburg. I came before you on April 24th of this year urging you to reissue the retail sales pilot study and relax the use of prohibiting sales of any food or drink product on LaMata property by allowing such sales under controlled conditions to be permitted outside of Fairgates. Chairman Zimmerman expressed interest that day by recounting the recent history of the project and urging staff to prepare a proposal on the issue, quote, by the end of the summer. I took this to mean that at least some portion of the Board of Directors was interested in exploring the potentially lucrative revenue stream that would be generated from rent and or profit sharing from sales at these locations. It has come as a disappointment that this matter on which Chairman Zimmerman specifically requested staff follow-up has not received a public discussion at a Board of Directors or committee meeting, and from the published upcoming agendas appears to have fallen off the radar. I wrote to the board on November 4th requesting follow-up on this matter and have not heard any response, which is why I'm before you today. I can see from today's agendas in both the committee and at the full board level a proposal to allow overflow parking from a local hotel within a Metro garage. I have no dispute with Metro entering into such an agreement. In fact, I think it's a great idea. But this hotel parking arrangement, which has obviously involved substantial staff time to prepare, will provide the Metro system a theoretical maximum of only $303.75 a day. The opening of retail venues as previously proposed by this board, even at the pilot study level, would surely provide a revenue stream to WMATA many times greater. I come before you as a member of the local business community who believes strongly there is much benefit for riders and for the Metro system by aggressively pursuing opportunities like this, which would generate additional significant revenue streams for WMATA. Again, I urge you to relaunch the pilot's retail study and modify it by allowing limited food sales outside of Fairgates. Thank you very much for your time.
Mr. Sianski, if I may ask you a couple questions. Sure. You said you sent a letter on November 4th.
I did.
I'm going to ask staff to look for that. I don't believe I've seen the letter, and I'd be concerned that we hadn't responded to you. But we will, you know, try to see what happened to that. In any case, you mentioned being a member of the local business community. Are you involved in a business that's relevant to this area specifically? You have particular knowledge about the, I mean, you just mentioned the fact that you're a business person, or do you have a business that's specifically would be related to this?
I'm working with two different development groups that are interested in the opportunity to bid, assuming that the nature of the bid package is similar to what we've seen before, but involving some level of food.
Okay, and so you're saying that based on your knowledge in that, there in fact is interest, and you, for one, would be pursuing such an opportunity if there was the opportunity to sell food items.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'll ask the general manager to follow up on this. And that is the only speaker we have this morning?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sianski. Let me go right to Mr. Cato. Mr. Sianski points out that, you know, we did talk about this some months ago, and there has been interest in the board in kind of whatever happened with this whole thing. And do you have something coming to us anytime soon?
Matt Ballingheimer has the information and the status of where we are.
Mr. Balligan?
Actually, what we had just begun doing, actually, in response to Mr. Sianski's letter, was we are right now in the process of preparing a board information memorandum that we were trying to get out either this week or next week to you, summarizing the information that we'd learned over the course of the last year in response to a request for expressions of interest. And so we didn't feel we could respond to Mr. Sianski's recent letter without having sent that that information memo to you and gotten feedback from you on a policy direction. In short, what we had learned was that there was limited interest in the business community for retail in our stations without a food component, and so there would obviously be a policy issue for the board about whether to recommend updating a policy with food or without food, or imposing restrictions on bringing food into the system, but including food as part of a retail opportunity. In short,
two questions there. One is,
two separate questions. One has to do with our policy about food in the system, the other having to do with what you could sell.
That's correct.
I don't think anybody was talking about changing the policy that bans food inside the rail system. The question is whether you're going to allow somebody to sell food on Mumata.
No, that's correct. And, and I guess the issue would then be a policy of enforcement, because we would obviously be increasing the need for enforcing. But in any event, the point is that the information memo is not complete yet. It's we're going to get it to the general manager this week or next and out to you soon.
Soon?
Within a week or two.
Okay, very good. We'll be looking for that with interest. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further comments or questions on that? If not, the agenda is before us. Are there any requests for changes to the agenda?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Benjamin. Put your microphone.
I request that item 11.3, Smart Trip Program to finalize ERG claims, be referred to the Technology Review Committee, and no action be taken at this meeting.
Mr. Benjamin would like to re-refer item 11.3, that's under administrative actions, to the ad hoc committee on technology review, is that what we call it?
Mm-hmm.
Technology review. Any questions, objections? Mr. Gatto.
We've had discussions with Director Benjamin, and we are in concurrence that we will take it to his committee and bring it to the board next month.
All right. I believe that Mr. Benjamin is joined by Mr. Giancola and Mr. McKay, who's not here in that request. If there's no objection, then we will so refer the matter and look forward to coming back next month. With that change, are there any other changes to the agenda? Hearing none, I'll ask unanimous consent that the agenda be accepted as so amended. Without objection, there's the agenda, and we will move now to the minutes. We have minutes before us from the meetings of October 16th and November 6th. Members have hopefully had a chance to review those. What's your pleasure?
Move approval of the minutes as presented.
Mr. Benjamin moves, Ms. Hewlett seconds approval of the minutes of both the meetings of October 16th and November 6th as presented. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Minutes are accepted. The next item is the report of the Writers Advisory Council. Is Ms. Iacomini here? Good morning, Ms. Iacomini. And I'm sorry we have you standing in the dark today.
I told people probably my best light is low light, so this is the Writers Advisory Council received a presentation at our November meeting on the proposed realignment of some rush hour or peak hour, if I may say, blue line trains that would run from Franconia Springfield to Greenbelt over the so-called Yellow Line Bridge. I think the long and the short of it is that RAC was not yet convinced that this implementation was ready to be done. There were several questions that we raised, especially about the proposed timeline for implementation. Ridership data shown to us did not decisively point to the need to implement this realignment in advance of the changes that would come with the start of the Silver Line service. Questions were also raised about the possibility of phasing in the new service to minimize disruption to existing Blue Line customers that are going north. You know, maybe instead of doing three or four trains, you try it with one or two. We really do appreciate the planning and research that has gone into this proposal thus far and would expect that Metro do additional public outreach as it moves forward. Members noted that while quantitative research has been done, something more like qualitative research, such as holding a public listening session on the proposal, had not yet been done in all affected areas. While some hearings on service changes and, of course, fare increases are mandated by the compact, not all reach that level. But this change will have great meaning for many people on the orange, blue, yellow, and green lines. And so RAF suggested strongly that at least one or two public hearings be held near stations that would be most effective. You know, public hearings often bring to light alternatives or tweaks that have not yet been thought of and can be very helpful. RAC also wanted some options explored that might help mitigate the service to Blue Line riders going north or their lack of service if this proposal is implemented. Suggestions of express bus service paralleling the northern route was mentioned as a possibility. Some RAC members also noted that not all stations are built alike, and this proposal could cause extra capacity to some stations, and they want to make sure that where that nexus would happen, there are adequate escalators, elevators, and stationary stairs. We do find that there can be trouble when you add more people to a station and there's not the infrastructure to handle them. Now, for full disclosure, I am a Boylston-born Orange Line writer, so to me, I love this. But RAG isn't just about me. It's about the entire system, and that's why we still think that it needs to be explored. But I think we do all understand that there's a limited amount of physical capacity, and there aren't going to be any more river crossings in the near future, so we need to use what we have. RAC also had a follow-up to the overview presentation on the elimination of paper transfers we received in September. We were briefed on staff's planned outreach and advertising campaign to alert riders to the pending elimination. One of the board committees has had this presentation as well. We were encouraged that staff is endeavoring to use a multiplicity of methods and media to alert riders. However, we are worried that this campaign isn't moving along rapidly enough. In recent days, I've been told that riders have seen the hanger cards on buses. But personally, I have yet to see any notice on the transfer machines at rail stations that I frequent. And in fact, last night, I had to go to East Falls Church for a meeting, and I used East Falls Church Metro Station. This is a station that has two rail transfer machines. One of them had taped to it the grip card, the other one had nothing. This is also a place where you can buy a smart trip card because there's an associated parking lot. Nothing on that that said, hey, buy a smart trip now because paper transfers are going to go away. No signage within the station, no signage on the platform. I went out to the bus bays. There was nothing in at least the first two bus shelters that I saw. It was about 9:45 at night, so I wasn't going to traipse around and explore all of them. But while I was there, a 2A bus, I think it was number 4063, came along. No signage on the side where passengers enter, but I did see two grip cards hanging from the inside. Maybe people had taken them during the day. All I'm saying is we're entering into the holiday season. People's minds begin to think of other things. People's transit patterns change. And if we don't get more information out there in a more timely way, we're going to have a lot of trouble come the time that we are going to eliminate paper, because it seems very clear to me that that is what's going to happen. I'm very encouraged that the item on your agenda about CVS being a distribution point, that's great. But it's not just a selling place for smart trip cards. We need places where bus riders can add fare without standing on the bus and feeding in their dollar bills. That's the next step that needs to happen. Improvements to Smart Trip also need to happen as rapidly as they are planned, or more so. And I know that the board and the technology ad hoc committee is going to be vigilant in watching over that. That's a part of this puzzle that, unfortunately, has been neglected. So I'm sorry to be a scold this morning, but it's just really been worrying us. And I know that Metro staff is going to step up to the plate. There's a ton of things that have been happening, certainly rail car issue with the bank, and certainly inauguration is coming our way. But I know that everyone here is going to do the best and even better than they have before. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Giacomini. Thank you for a very good report. I think you've made a number of important points that are no doubt shared by board members. To take the last item first on paper transfers, I would say that at least one board member shares Ms. Giacomini's concern that what's happening needs to be rolling out more quickly, and the pace needs to accelerate as we move towards January 4th. You know, as recently as a week and a half ago, I was having people coming up to me saying that they had rumors about transfers being eliminated. You know, they'd heard enough to know there wasn't going to be a transfer, but not enough to know that they'll still be able to get a free transfer, and there'll be some advantages to them. Now, since that time, a number of things have happened. These things have started appearing, although I haven't personally seen one yet, but, you know, this was handed to me by someone who did see them. And I'd say the general reaction is this is a really good idea as far as a way to get this information out. It gets people's attention. I think that, you know, the door hanger on the rail thing was a good idea. I'm less enthusiastic about the content. When I asked the question a week or so ago, I said, is it the same as the grip card I saw? I'm not sure what I conveyed what I was referring to, but I now see it is the same as the grip card I saw, which I don't think is everything it could be in terms of conveying the information. It's a lot of text. I think it's a little dense. I'm not sure how easy it is, you know, for people to figure out exactly what's happening. My bigger concern is that I have now firsthand testimony for somebody who got this and said, okay, well, what does this mean? Where can I get a card and called the number that's listed here and got a really not helpful set of replies, starting with, well, you go to a metro station. And the person said, well, what if I only ride bus? Well, where are you? And said, Fairfax City, and was told after some time to go to Pentagon. And, you know, I'm pretty sure you gave us a whole bunch of places that would be more convenient to someone in Fairfax City than the Pentagon. In any case, my point here is that I don't feel we yet have a coordinated communication strategy being implemented. We have a few of the pieces happening, but we're not there yet, and I am concerned also that we're, you know, it's already almost Thanksgiving. So, and the fact that this happens right after the holidays complicates matters as well. So I really do urge you to find ways to improve the communication and step it up, because for all the reasons that Yakmini said, basically. I also wanted to address a little bit the Blue Line realignment question. I think that Ms. Yakmini correctly identified all the issues and continuing to work on the details of this, including taking more public input and looking all the ways this can be refined, is going to be very important. I also think the bottom line is in part what she ended with, which is that we need to use the capacity we have across the river. We're not getting any more anytime soon, so those extra four spaces on the bridge need to get used somehow. Ms. Yakmini pointed out that as an Orange Line user who goes east, that's a benefit to her. I would say it's not that she's an Orange Line user specifically, but because she is taking the Orange Line through the Roslyn portal, it's an advantage to her. And if you're a South Arlingtonian like me, it's an advantage to you too if you're going, you know, across the river to the anything on the east side of town. You know, the issue is really a matter of which way you're going on the system, not where you're coming from. And so, for instance, when I come here, as I did this morning, and I have to get on at Pentagon or Pentagon City, I need to take a Yellow Line train. I see the condition that people that ride in that corridor do 5 days a week, who frequently complain to me that coming home, they saw 2-3 Green Line trains go by before a Yellow Line came, and going in, there were multiple Blue Line trains before there's a Yellow Line train. And what happened when I got there this morning was kind of representative. I got to the platform, I got to the mezzanine, looked down over the platform, and saw it absolutely packed. This is not that uncommon in Pentagon City. And the next train up was the Yellow Line train. So, I mean, I thought, well, good, lucky, that's my train. And I looked down and saw it all packed, and the next two were Blue Line trains. And then the Yellow Line train came up, and it was quite full. And everybody starts moving toward the train even before it comes up, as opposed to stepping back to let people off, because, of course, everybody is panicked to get on that train. And indeed, it was hard for everybody to get on that train. But knowing that all they saw was Blue Line coming, they knew they needed to make it on that train. And it was so full that we got to the next stop, the doors opened and closed multiple times with the operator saying, I'm going to have to offload the train if we can't get the doors closed. And this is the kind of complication that happens from, you know, the fact that we've got an overburdened line there as the employment has grown in this end of town, basically the east side of the district downtown, and we have more and more people traveling up in that corridor, which illustrates part of the reason we need more trains to be able to cross the bridge. I did make me wonder whether we shouldn't be assigning more of the 6,000 series to a line like that, which has slightly more capacity, but also gets people on and off the train more easily. But that's a side point. At any rate, all these are reasons why I think the considerations that Ms. Yakmini raised on behalf of the Writers' Council are important, but we also need to be moving forward expeditiously toward a resolution. Any comments or questions from anyone else? Ms. Hutchinson.
I would like to say thank you to Ms. Yakmini. She is very diligent in her role as a RAC person. In addressing the paper transfer issue, I would like to bring the board's attention to a letter that was directed to all of the members of this board from the Disability Services Board Chair, Ms. Ann Penley. And most concern to me is her concerns about how to deal with the visually impaired riders who will be needing a little assistance according to the way the system works today, and how they can make sure that, one, it will be at least as painless approach as possible when they're talking about reloading, and how they can communicate with the drivers, because it gives an exposure that they probably would rather not have. We're different than when you're at the ATM, and you have a lot more security in doing that.
I understand that there are a couple of things that we're doing to address particular kinds of needs like you mentioned here. First, we're going to be having a training session. This is for social service agencies who deal with special needs, and also for people who do, for social service agencies that deal with low-income clients. We will be having some training sessions, sort of a train-the-trainer, in early December. We have a couple of meetings scheduled, and people on my staff are also available on an on-call basis to help train the trainer. But specifically, you know, so that's one avenue. Another avenue that we have is the training that I had mentioned, I think, in our last committee meeting, and Mr. Francis's staff and Mila Francis's, Mr. Francis's staff and Mila Victoria's staff have been engaged in a sort of a refresh training with our bus operators to you know, make sure that they're particularly cognizant of the kinds of issues that you're raising here.
Okay, the sooner
the better. The sooner is better.
Agreed.
Other questions or comments? I will, in the interest of time, forego any comments this morning. I do have revised 2008 committee assignments before you as item 6B. The only revision here is the addition of our newest member, Mr. Albert, and his assignments. And I probably should have said we swore him in between meetings, so we didn't actually we haven't had a meeting here that he's been able to attend, so let me just take this opportunity to say welcome to our newest member. Appreciate having you here. Look forward to working with you. And the committee assignments, again, just plugs Mr. Albert into the relevant committees where we had the vacancy, including the vice chairmanship of the Planning, Development, and Real Estate Committee. And I move approval of the revised assignments. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Graham. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. And that will bring us to the general manager. Mr. Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Even though the presidential inauguration is still 2 months away, the clock is ticking, and Metro is fully immersed in the planning for the four-day inauguration weekend of events from Saturday, January the 17th, through Tuesday, the inauguration day, January the 20th. We realize that the eyes of the nation and the world will be on us as record crowds are expected to arrive in our region for the weekend of celebrations. Last week, the mayor of Washington, D.C. was on television predicting that 3 million people will be here to watch and to participate in the inauguration. Earlier this week, there was another news account that indicated that some officials thought the number would be 4 million people on the mall. Will it be the largest crowd ever? We think so. How will these that many people get there with the roads being closed and parking limited? Will Metro set a new record for ridership? The region, again, is depending on us and what we can do and to do what we do best, and that is to be transportation leaders. Every one of us who work at Metro will play a critical role, whether they are the accountants, bus operators, rail supervisors, station managers, custodians, mechanics, or administrative assistants. They will be involved in an effort, a dedicated effort, that our 10,000-plus employees will put on to make sure that the inauguration weekend is successful. The crowds will be absolutely enormous. People should expect to be riding in crowded rail cars and crowded buses. They should expect to wait in long lines to get back into the stations afterwards. However, while there might be some inconvenience that some people might have to wait up to one hour or more just to get into a Metro Rail station after the inauguration. But the motto here is no tourists will be left behind. After all, most of the crowds will leave after the new president is sworn in and after he has completed his inauguration address. Some will stay for the parade. Some, I hope, will stay downtown, perhaps to visit a museum, to have lunch, or even to catch a movie, because everyone will not be able to immediately squeeze back into our trains and buses all at once. People will be coming into the region from all over for these downtown events. Yet, they will all be trying to get back home by entering just a few handful of stations that will serve the downtown core. So again, I want to emphasize to expect very long lines and very crowded stations. rail riders should expect that we will need to turn off several station escalators to ensure safety and to monitor the size of the crowds on the platforms. We will get people to the events, but we will do so safely. So crowd monitoring is important to make sure that people do not get injured. Our plans for this upcoming inaugural weekend are at this point preliminary, and we remain flexible and possibly, and there is a possibility that we will alter our services as we learn of other events that may be planned during the four-day weekend. The current plans are to operate rail services from a rush hour perspective from 4 a.m. in the morning to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, January the 20th, for inaugural day. This is 15 straight hours of rush hour service. We will stay open for 2 extra hours until 2 a.m. to allow people who are attending inaugural balls to do so. We will be requesting that the Presidential Inauguration Committee pay for this additional service, which is needed to ensure that the event is successful. The day before Inauguration Day, which is Martin Luther King Jr.'s day, Monday, January the 19th, we will keep our rail system open later that evening until midnight. We will keep it later than midnight. We will also keep an eye open for events being planned around the region and make a decision to ensure that we have plenty of advance notice to the public of what services that we're offering. Since the four-day inauguration weekend includes a Saturday, Sunday, and 2 federal holidays, Martin Luther King Jr. Day and the Inauguration Day itself, parking at our facilities will be free for automobiles. However, we have an exception for charter buses. We have only 60,000 spaces, and we expect for them all to be filled. So we want to make sure that people are considering to take a Metro bus to our station, and Metro Access customers will need to make reservations in advance for their trips as well. One of the things that we're currently are planning with the other providers within the region are specialized bus service using bus-only streets to bring people to the mall itself. That process is still in the early planning stages, and we will communicate that to the board and to the public as they become more finalized. We also know that tour buses will be coming to the regions by the hundreds and possibly the thousands. And we're working with Destination DC, the local visitors bureau, to find out where those charter buses plan to drop off their riders and to find out where they plan to park to ensure that we have enough support staff, one hand, to help guide these tour groups to use our system. And we are looking forward to selling them fare media in advance in order to cut down on the lines at the stations during that four-day celebration. We know that the Stadium Armory Metrorail station will be crowded because so many of these tour buses will be parking at the RFK station. From a security standpoint, the U.S. Secret Service have requested that the Navy Memorial and the Penn Quarter Metrorail station be closed all day on inaugural day because it is in the security zone for the presidential parade. They have also asked that the main Smithsonian Metrorail station entry along the National Mall also be closed for security. We plan to keep the Independence Avenue side entry of the Smithsonian open. However, we're still in the early planning stages and the situation could change. Also related to security, we're requesting that the board approve a resolution that our restrooms will be closed during the parade on the inaugural day, but we will provide portable restrooms to entries to our stations. From a communications effort, we will publish a commemorative metro guide and map illustrating the closest location of various metro rail stations to the inauguration swearing-in ceremony and parade and the walking routes for people to get from our stations to these events and from our bus locations to these events. The guides will be available at all of our stations, on our buses, and on our website. We plan to distribute 1 million copies.
We also have designed commemorative fare cards, one-day passes, and a smart trip card that our riders will be able to purchase and use in the weeks leading up to and after the inauguration. The paper fare cards are expected to be in vending machines by late December. And at certain locations, we will have staff on hand to sell the day fare cards to individuals coming in large crowds. The commemorative smart trip cards will be available in early January, and we are requesting that the board set those at a cost of $10 each. We are establishing an inaugural e-alert system that will be available tomorrow afternoon. We will ask people to sign up to receive e-alerts related to the inauguration only. When we learned of how plans might impact our services, we will send out e-alerts to our customers. On inauguration day itself, we're likely to send out e-alerts with transit updates. And then the day after the inauguration, the e-alerts will stop. All of the information I'm sharing with you today will be posted on our website. By tomorrow afternoon, we expect to have a special inaugural website that will give updated information, and that too will be posted on the regular Metro website. On July 11th of this year, 854,638 people took Metrorail on the day that there was a baseball game in town and a huge conference of women of faith. This is currently the highest ridership day in our history. If the crowds are what is predicted and the roadways are going to be as congested as communicated for this historical inauguration, we will see something that we've never seen before in terms of high ridership. What that will be, I cannot say. We will all have to wait until inauguration day itself to determine what that number is. But I want everyone in this room to know and the public to know that this city and this nation to realize that we will be prepared. Metro will operate every vehicle available to it. It's all of its rail cars, its buses, and work hand in hand with the regional operators to ensure that individuals coming to this city and individuals who reside within this region will be able to attend the inauguration ceremonies and to do so in public transportation. Everyone in this room expects to see this city and this region swell with pride on January the 20th as we welcome a new president. And if ever there was an opportunity to prove that we provide the best ride in the nation, this will be the day. Mr. Chairman, there's many more steps that we need to take in order to be prepared, but we're taking those steps and the planning is continuing up until the day of the inauguration. And that's my inauguration update, but okay, I have a few others.
We'll stop right there because I'm sure there's questions. I know I have a couple of them. A few little items. The presentation, you talked about parking being free at Metro lots.
But that's because our current policy dictates that on holidays and weekends, parking is free at the Metro.
That's by existing policy.
Existing policy.
Which is why it's not addressed in the resolution.
Yes.
That's the reason I was asking the question. Okay. Secondly, the commemorative pass, which I think is a good idea. If nothing else, it should be an opportunity to make some revenue. I suspect this will be of interest to people who may never use our system or who may be here only for the day and for whom it will be a nice commemorative thing. However, the proposal is to have it sold without any value?
Yes.
So here's the question. If I get this card, you know, and then I actually do come and want to use it, I'm going to have to now go and load it, which is, you know, some time for me to do, especially if there's 50,000 of me, and added to the fact that I'm probably, you know, if I'm from Iowa and I've never done this before, it might take me just a little longer than the average, you know, local takes to do it. Nothing against people from Iowa, but, you know. First time doing it takes a little longer than when you do it every, you know, every week or month or whatever. So are we concerned that not having any value on it at all might complicate the situation for lines of people seeking to add value?
This is the trade-off here. When we get cars from our producer, from our manufacturer, They come in without being initialized, without having anything on there. There's a separate action that takes place once we receive these cards, and that action takes time. And that was our decision, was we'd rather have, you know, a small number of cards early and imperfect rather than not have cards but yet maybe have value or something like that.
I understand the trade-off then, although I wouldn't say a small number, because it's quite possible these are going to be a very popular item.
Well, and that was another concern that we had. I mean, originally we were talking about originally we wanted a pretty significant number. We knew this was going to be huge, and the manufacturer came back with, you know, no, the answer is no. And so we went back and forth. We pushed the manufacturer as far as we could, and so we have as much as we can get, which is about 35,000 cards.
Well, all we'll be able to get is 35,000?
I'm sorry?
Did you say 35,000 is as many as we can get?
That's right.
Oh, I think, yes, the price just went up.
And these cards are made in Germany, and so there's a whole bunch of things that happen way behind the scenes that have to happen before we can actually get them into our hands. These cards are only going to be available online and also at our retail, at our Metro owned locations.
Right, but if they're available online, I think you're going to be selling them the moment that you put something up there offering people the opportunity for advanced orders, which I think you should do soon. Mm-hmm. And I think you should explore whether it wouldn't be possible to get a second run or something, because there may be people who want them even after the fact. I have some other questions, but I'm going to turn it to other members for other questions. Ms. Hudgens, followed by Ms. Hewlett and Mr. Graham, and people over there too.
I wanted to raise the same concern, but would you tell me what you think is the time involved, and you said imperfect, in order to do the loading? Because I'm in the same place where Mr. Zimmerman is that any time that we can invest to reduce the time that the customer will need to get acquainted to our system, and we're talking about customers that don't know the system.
Right. At this point right now, we are expecting delivery of these cards without any value on them less than 2 weeks before the inauguration.
Okay.
And so could we take a week to get them added value? We could, but then that kind of backs things up with regard to delivering to our retail locations, and that's the concern. That's the risk.
Let me ask you what, and I'm assuming you're following the same process that you followed with the prior, for example, Nationals baseball card and those things,
Actually, in that case, we had the luxury of time. We knew a year in advance that the stadium was, that the ballpark was going to be built, where it was going to go, what it was going to look like. We had that luxury of time. In this instance, we didn't know who the president was going to be until November 4th, and it gave us about 8 weeks to get the cards designed, ordered, and then, you know, the manufacturing is happening. Then they come in. You have customs to worry about because it's coming in from Germany. If you have any holdups there, there's a lot of risk with all of this.
Okay. I have another question. It's not about the cards. And maybe it was – I didn't hear it in your presentation, Mr. General Manager, but did I hear something about the limiting the use of bicycles during this entire period?
Yes, in fact –
as part of the resolution, which I was going to go over next with the board, we're recommending doing the on the 20th itself, on the inauguration day, that you not be allowed to bring bicycles on the trains. The reason for that is the loads will be so large. We're concerned about the safety of our customers, and there are restrictions which will be in place of what you can bring to the mall itself, as well as to the parade route. And so for that particular day, we're asking the board to prohibit bicycles on the trains themselves.
Jeez. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Cato, for your briefing. I have a couple questions. You mentioned that the previous inaugurations, the extra expenses associated with handling the crowds were reimbursed by the committee. Can you give me some feel of what it was, and did they reimburse us for all the costs?
What they reimbursed us for was late services for the night of the inaugural balls themselves. And I believe Sarah Wilson has.
But you mentioned rush hour is going to be extended for a very long period.
Sure. And just to clarify, in 2005, the It was actually one of the sponsors of one of the pre-inaugural balls who requested extra service. And that was a state society, I believe, in 2005. And they're the ones who paid for that extra service. But that decision came down to the wire, frankly. And it wasn't until the very last minute that they were able to come through with the money.
Okay, I'm not sure.
But there was there was no other reimbursement for any extra service or any of that.
We didn't get any?
No.
No.
Do we know what we spent the last time? Unreimbursed? Extra cost?
I do not have that information.
Yeah, I don't need it today, but it'd be nice to know what that is. And you mentioned restrooms, portable restrooms being put outside our stations, I'm assuming.
Yes.
I think that's a great idea, knowing there'll be a lot of people wanting to use them. And then you mentioned bus-only lanes. You know, this is a city. We have regular activities. Are you anticipating which bus-only lanes will be taken on certain avenues or streets?
We do not know that yet. We've had discussions with the District of Columbia Department of Transportation, as well as VDOT in Virginia, to work with them to establish different quarters that buses could come into the city and drop off people at the mall. We're asking that these quarters be exclusive bus-only lanes. That has not been determined yet, but we do have that recommendation, and we are going through those discussions. This is an opportunity to move hundreds of thousands of people very rapidly into the downtown area and back out. As I mentioned earlier, the crowds on the rail system, it's going to be enormous. We will be able to move them, but it's going to take time to do so. This gives us an additional tool in our toolbox, so to speak, to move additional people.
So we'll be going to as many 8-car trains as we can.
Absolutely.
And we'll be putting on all the extra buses we have.
Yes.
Which, you know, all that obviously costs money. Now, in the last inauguration, we kind of knew what streets they've closed downtown. Is that going to change, you think, or what's your speculation on that?
We know some of the streets that are closed. However, that's up to the Secret Service working with the District of Columbia. We anticipate there will be changes.
All right, thank you.
Ms. Giancola, that last point, I think, is an important one, that, you know, people in other places are making a decision about what streets may be closed entirely or there will be restrictions on how bridges are going to be handled and all that. And the important thing is that we're involved because we actually can be part of the solution of this difficult problem of how you, on the one hand, maintain security and, on the other hand, move an enormous number of people in and out. And, you know, the slide that's up there now shows the, you know, tremendous impact possible on the rail system, 93 really standing out. And we can expect that we're looking at something like that. That's a not untypical number for us now, though, on the rail system. To bring a lot more people in and out, we're going to need all those buses Mr. Giancola was referring to. You know, when we do have 1,500 buses, most of them, you know, much of them that would be free on a holiday anyway. But the question is, how can we work with them to make use of the streets in a way that will allow a lot more people to be moved in and out under these circumstances? I think that's very important. Mr. Graham.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Mr. Cato, for this very informative report. We really appreciate it. I remember that in the 2001 inauguration, we had magnetometers in use. That's metal detectors, for those of you who don't know the fancy word. But we had them in the stations. And I remember, you know, the huge, I think it was 2001. Yeah, it was 2001, I think it was. I remember the huge, maybe it was four, though. But anyway, I remember the huge backlog of people as they were trying to negotiate the magnetometers as they were exiting onto Pennsylvania Avenue. Is there been any discussion of again using the magnetometers for this inauguration?
We have not been informed of that by the Uniformed Secret Service. They will be magnetometers that will be in use in adjacent to the parade routes, because there will be a series of 5 levels of credentialing. So if in fact there are some magnetometers that will be used in close proximity, I have not been informed that there will be utilization of those in the Metro Rail system.
Do we have an estimate, Mr. Thank you very much, Chief. Do we have an estimate of what the additional costs of all of this will be to the authority?
We can put the, we're still putting those numbers together depending upon the amount of service. We're still in the planning stage, but we will communicate. We can send that to the board.
Well, I think that's something that we really ought to consider because, you know, if we need additional revenues, and I would never just suggest what I'm about to suggest just for the sake of raising money, although perhaps others might. But here we have 35,000 of these Smart Trip cards, which are going to be, I think, judging from all of the interest in this, are going to be they're going to be the subject of a lot of public interest. And if you're going to sell them online, which I think you said, didn't you say that? Then maybe we could look to this as a source of some of the additional revenue if we need it. And do you have the authority to increase the price of the card?
Well, one of the resolution in front of you spells out what the cost of the card would be. However, the board can delegate that authority just as I'm requesting a delegation of authority to be able to make service changes as necessary.
You're already proposing to us that to double the cost of the card, right?
Yes.
And you've already responded to the notion that we can't load it with any travel fares.
Not without risking some time delay in getting it out to people.
All right. And was it your intention to commit this additional revenue to additional costs that we'll have to sustain during this period of time?
Absolutely. Any revenue achieved by the sale of Smart Trip cards or parking goes in the general fund to help offset expenses of the agency. And you're correct. This will be a large increase in costs. Having said that, we will be prepared to move people in this region. I think that's our responsibility. But it will cost additional dollars.
But if we have the amount of ridership that we had in 1993, and I know it's difficult, if not impossible, to estimate this, but if we got up to over 800,000 on rail, of course, that would be a large additional amount of revenue as well, would it not?
Well, today we carry close to that number on our rail system, and we operate peak hours service. On this particular day, we're going to be operating peak hour service all day. It's not a peak fare because it's a holiday.
Right. Right, but if you compare it to what was our daily ridership in 1993, how much of an increase did this represent? You probably don't know that offhand.
I absolutely do not know that off the top of my head.
Yeah, it's about double.
But we're told by others that it was about double. And so if something like that happened on January the 20th, wow.
I fully expect, it would be just a guesstimate. We're preparing for that.
You're preparing for what?
More than double our ridership.
Well, but, I mean, there are physical limitations. I doubt that it's possible to move 1.6 million people on our system. And that's why the buses, I think, are so important.
That's why the buses. And when I say system, I mean the entire regional system.
Yeah.
Okay, well, again, I commend you for this forethought. Thank you.
I just wanted to double check. You did say that we will be charging holiday fares because it will be a holiday, right?
Yes.
I believe that the District of Columbia gets reimbursed for part of its costs associated with the inauguration. Is that correct? Is there some way for us to also approach the same source and get our costs reimbursed?
I will approach any source that has dollars that they can reimburse us for. But I want to be clear that might not happen. We will attempt to do that. We will meet with every organization that's funding the inauguration, and I will communicate back to you of success or lack of success in that effort.
Could we encourage you to do that and to do that early?
Yes.
Mr. Cato, I think it's one thing to ask afterwards, but I think perhaps if people who are involved in this understood that it might affect what we are able to do to help in this effort, that we might be able to get some prior commitment to, you know, some of that. And so I think that conversation needs to be engaged right away, you know, with the relevant folks on the Hill who are planning this, because we are looking at a range of things. And as I've said to you, I think we should be going there and saying, you know, let us be your mobility manager. Let us help solve this problem that we have about how to move one, two, three, four, whatever million people it is, in and out. But obviously that will require resources, and what we can do will depend on what the resources are. But if we're part of their solution, they're more likely to be, you know, interested and understand why it is of interest to them. And perhaps we can get some kind of, you know, pledge up front, which will make it easier for us to decide to do, you know, some of the things we, at the margin, we may do or not do if we don't have the funding available.
Can I may continue?
Mr. Benjamin, sure.
Trying to put value on smart trip cards, and you will continue to sell our normal smart trip cards, which are encoded.
Yes, we will.
And I'll ask that Ms. O'Keefe work on relevant language for what Mr. Benjamin just described. So when we get to the resolution, we can adopt something.
Another issue along the same line, you've talked about charter buses parking. How about charter buses using our bus bays? Is that going to be allowed or not allowed?
We would not allow the charter buses to use the bus bays because we expect many of the regional operators and our partners in the region to be using those bus bays as they transport people. So that we would not allow them to use the bus bays.
Okay, so they will not use the bus bays at all.
Right.
Okay.
So there's no indemnification issue that might otherwise arise.
Or charge or anything else.
Well, in the resolution, you are giving me the authority to charge for charter buses to park within our facilities.
But not to use the facilities, and we don't have to worry about whether they're insured and things like that, because they won't be allowed in. That will be an interesting enforcement issue.
It's going to be a creative enforcement issue, but we believe we can handle
it. Well, then I will just put the thought in your head about whether there's any indemnification issues. I don't need an answer right now, but I trust you'll be thinking about that. Let's figure out if we have such an issue. Mr. Albert.
Yes, I'm the rookie, so I apologize.
It's okay, we all make mistakes.
Yes. So I just want to drill down on a few items. Obviously, with the increased ridership, there's going to be increased costs to the metro system. Is there an opportunity to expand revenue opportunities? And the one I'm looking at is the commemorative card, fare card. I understand that there are time pressures in getting it in town in time. Is there only one vendor that produces these cards? Have we explored other opportunities to get similar cards from other vendors?
That's a very good question, Mr. Albert. We, I think there are maybe multiple vendors, but we only deal currently with one. So we could certainly explore other vendors that could possibly provide the commemorative card. Of course, they wouldn't be able to provide we could provide the value on it, or
the aspect of the value still remains there.
Right. I mean, so these could be other vendors that would have a commemorative card, possibly, but we'd have to.
What would it take for you to give us an answer as to whether or not that's a possibility that could be accomplished within the time frame that you need,
Mr. Director Alford? What we're going to do, and based upon this discussion, is to push the max that we can with all the vendors. I can't commit that there would be more, but trust me, we will make every effort possible to get the maximum number of cards and also to encode the maximum number of cards with fare for this event. And so after this meeting, we will begin to make phone calls to determine if there are other options for us.
So I'd appreciate if you got back to the board on your efforts.
Mr. Albert, if I could just say that certainly the ability to sell these beyond the inauguration, we absolutely have that capability. So if the question is, could we order more right now? We absolutely could. Could we order more that would get here before January 20th? That's the question here.
Right, and for me, it's not an issue whether they can get here. I'd love to get as many here before January 20th. But if these are such hot commodities, folks are probably going to buy them until January 20th, 2010, 11 or 12. And so, again, we've got to figure out a way to maximize the revenues that we get from this occasion, because we're going to be spending a lot of that revenue on crowd control and extra trains, et cetera. I want to move to a different issue, and that's the ability to move folks through our stations. I happen to be involved in the planning for the inauguration, and one of the concerns that we have as the District of Columbia is Metro's ability to actually move passengers, particularly through the train system. I think Metro did a terrific job when the Pope visited. Mr. Cato was there at the station. I don't know what you were doing, Mr. Cato, but you looked as though you were on official business.
I've given moral support.
Given moral support. And that was a great experience. You move passengers through the system quite quickly. So I ran the Marine Corps Marathon a few weeks ago, and the system had a little difficulty getting people out of the train stations. And this was not a major major event. In fact, some folks actually missed the race because of the backup at a few stations. So we expect a whole lot more people this time around. What kind of assurances could you give this board that you'd be able to really move people through a gauntlet of security, right, massive crowds, et cetera, and still manage an efficient system that day?
Well, I want to give the assurance of the 11,000 employees who are going to be focused on providing that level of service. There have been many times over the past year with the opening of the National Stadium where people question our abilities to move people. We did so, and we demonstrated that. The question has come up during the 4th of July celebration. Could we move a large number of people? We demonstrated that we could do that. And I am confident that we will demonstrate that on the 21st of January, people will say that we did our job and that we moved people within this region. Having said that, it's going to take time. And we will communicate to people that there will be delays, because you cannot put 800,000 plus people in the rail system all at the same time. But we will be able to provide very reliable service and move the people who are coming to visit this region. I make that commitment, a personal commitment, a professional commitment, with the standing behind me 11,000 employees of this agency. Thank you. I would do so.
Mr. Cato, one of the things you mentioned concerned restrooms and closing the station restrooms, and you said, but we will provide portables.
Yes.
That isn't actually mentioned in the resolution?
No, it is not mentioned in the resolution because it did not require board direction in order to rent portable toilets. I mean, we could put it in there.
I'd like some acknowledgement because, yeah. You know, yeah. I think that while I understand the reasons why you want to not use those restrooms relating to security and all that, the fact of these large crowds makes actually the restrooms more important, not less important. And since people will be, in effect, trapped in places for long periods of time, and I remember the one in 93 when I was there with small children at the time, I think that's really important and we need to be acknowledging that. So if we can get some language in here, and I'm looking forward to seeing the strategy on that matter as well.
Okay.
I also did sense some discomfort among my colleagues at the banning of bicycles. Again, I think people probably understand, again, the capacity issues, but at the same time, does that require some other conversation, Mr. Graham?
It requires some other conversation.
start us.
It requires some other comment. Do you want to have it now, though?
I don't know.
I don't think we have to have it now, but I think at our next meeting, we have to talk about that a bit more.
Okay, well,
and so may I request, with your leave, if we could have some additional details on just, you know, the analysis of the issue. I think that, you know, that might make us more comfortable, it might make us less comfortable, but we should have the analysis of what might lead to this decision.
And we to, again, update the board, it is our policy on July 4th, we do not allow bicycles in the system, but we will do the analysis and bring it back to you.
But I think anything that excludes people from, you know, really participating in this great day, you know, is something that we should approach with very considerable care. And you know, there's been lawsuits over the viewing the parade on Pennsylvania Avenue. And but we just got to keep all of that in mind.
We will bring this back as early as the committee meetings in December, because whatever direction we take, we have to publicize that and get it out. I'm assuming, and I shouldn't assume, I'm asking, we're going to move forward with the resolution excluding this segment on the bicycles, adding some terminology concerning my abilities to sell the commemorative Smart Trip card for additional amounts if we add value, as well as some words concerning portable toilets that will be available due to the fact that we're closing out our restrooms.
Hang on the way to get there. Thank you, Mr. Cano. In addition to the considerations that Mr. Graham cited with regard to bicycles and, you know, kind of exclusion, with which I agree, although it is January and it may or may not be relevant depending on the weather, if the weather is nice and a lot of people are coming, bicycles might actually be part of the strategy of moving people in and out. It may be a small percentage, but at the margin that can matter. So that's also what I'm thinking about, you know, whether there's some kind of modification or something. I don't know, but it just seems to me that's a transportation consideration also that we don't lightly dismiss. Mr. Graham.
I'm unready to support the resolve clause excluding no bicycles, and I would ask that we either modify this to take into account our subsequent consideration in December, or that we delete it and have a further authorization on this after we've had the analysis. Would you have a problem with that, Mr.
Yes, sir, because the planning has to be put in place very quickly, and we're going to have to print out different documents, and I need the abilities to commit what we're going to do. If I do not have that abilities, we'll be in mid-December with lack of a plan to communicate to the public, and the plan will take some approval from other security organizations.
But it's only the bicycle issue.
Oh, I misunderstood you.
So
I'm sorry.
Not to put aside the whole resolution.
Okay.
Would you
yes.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that I was just told the segment of that, I think we want to strike out the first sentence because it also includes the restrooms.
Oh, yeah.
And we have a revision here from the council if we could read to you.
Ms. O'Keefe, you have something to help us?
I hope, but I've also incorporated one of your prior comments. So that resolve would be that on January 20, 2009, all Metro Rail station restrooms will be closed to the public, and portable restrooms will be provided at critical locations.
Would you like to move to substitute that?
Well, I will, with further language change. I'm a big fan of signage, And so with
appropriate signage.
With appropriate signage.
Saying that the public restrooms are closed for today, but their restrooms are available, so and so. With that change, I will move the amendment.
All right, there's a motion to amend the resolution by substituting the language you've just heard for what was the first resolved clause. Is there, I'll second the motion. Discussion, Mr. Benjamin.
There was also the suggestion that we give the staff flexibility to add value to the smart grid.
That's a separate clause. We've got to dispose of this amendment
just on
first.
This
yeah, just on this. If not, question is on the motion to amend. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Okay, next one. Mr. Benjamin.
And Ms. O'Keefe, do you have language to give staff flexibility to encode smart grid cards should the opportunity arise?
If there's no objection, with unanimous consent, we'll incorporate that into the motion. The motion is so amended. Any further modifications? Hearing none, question is on the main motion, on the resolution itself. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries unanimously. Thank you. And we'll be looking forward to hearing back from you in the weeks ahead about ongoing developments with this very important matter.
We reduce them, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to skip the rest of my presentation and just recognize our employee of the month, the employee highlight. Mr. Francis will speak up. Thank you.
Mr. Zimmerman, if I can have you join Mr. Cato. I'd like to invite at this time bus operator Jennifer Edwards, if she would join Mr. Cato, Mrs. Zimmerman, and okay. This month we put the spotlight on bus operator Jennifer Edwards. Operator Edwards works out of the 4 Mile Metro Bus Division and has been an operator since 2004. On October the 19th, Operator Edwards had completed her route and went home for the day. While watching television, an Amber Alert was issued for a missing young boy. She realized that this was the same woman and child that rode her bus earlier that day. She immediately called 911 and gave the authorities a detailed description of the woman and the missing child that was on her bus. She also provided where the two boarded and exited her bus. Based on Operator Edwards' statements, the Federal Bureau of Investigation contacted the Metro Transit Police Department, who was able to pull a video from the bus to show the boy and his abductor on the bus. This information gave authorities a strong lead that ultimately resulted in the arrest of the abductor and the rescue of the young boy. Operator Edwards' observant and conscientious actions assisted with returning an abducted child safely to his family. I'd like for each and every one of us to stand and recognize Operator Edwards.
Ms. Hutchinson. I just wanted to comment and extend my thank you. It was amazing that you could go across the county in meetings and hear people talking about the incident and how it came to pass. And it's very good to hear that it was our Metro employee that really put it into the positive motion of resolving this very critical issue. So thank you, Ms. Edwards, for all of your diligence as a Metro employee and your sensitivity to all of your customers.
Thank you, Mrs. Hutchins. I'm sure all the board shares in that sentiment. Very well done. We will now move to that concludes your report, Mr. Cato?
Yes, sir.
We'll move then to the report of the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee, although we seem to have lost the chairman of that committee. Well, Perhaps we'll pass by that committee for the moment, and are you ready? We can go to your committee. Then I'll take the report of the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee. Mr. Benjamin.
We do have two action items before us at the present time. First one is to increase charter fees. This is an attempt to recover our fully allocated costs. The current rate is $83 per hour. That will remain for local jurisdictional charter services. And the proposal is to increase the fees for others to $159 per hour without lectures and $172 per hour with lectures. And there's some more points on minimum times and things like that. The action is before you. I move approval.
Mr. Benjamin moves approval of the committee recommendation, which is seconded by Mrs. Hudgens. Any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye. Opposed? That motion carries unanimously. Mr. Benjamin.
The second item before you is to amend the budget for a security camera project. Total cost is $275,000. We'll put cameras at 12 rail stations. 10 of those are in the District of Columbia, which will reimburse $200,000 of the $275,000. The others are in Fairfax County, and it will reimburse $75,000 for the cameras. I move approval.
A motion by Mr. Benjamin, seconded by Mrs. Hudgens, to approve the item. Is there any discussion, questions? If not, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries unanimously. Mr. Benjamin?
That's it.
That concludes your report. All right. We will move to the report of the Planning, Development, and Real Estate Committee. Mrs. Hudgens.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. The Planning and Development Committee met to other committees, and we were presented with the Marriott LaMotta parking, use of the Marriott for the LaMotta parking garage at Prince George's County. Staff requested authorization to negotiate an amendment to the joint development retail ground lease at Prince George's Retail LLC for Courtyard Marriott at Delta Center guest non-exclusive use of 45 spaces in that. So the committee moved that staff negotiate.
Ms. Hudgens moves approval. Seconded by Ms. Hewlett. For the discussion, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The motion carries. Mr. Benjamin and the chairman dissenting.
The second item that we had before is...
That's the motion. Okay, Ms. Hudgens moves. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Benjamin. We did have a good and extensive discussion of this, part of which is that we're going to be getting some additional information that will aid us in making further decisions down the line about things like interior configurations, about which I do want to put one question on the table that doesn't need to be answered now, but we clarified that the seating configuration is something that we'll be able to make subsequent decisions about. One aspect of that, though, that we didn't directly discuss is the potential for, I mean, as you move seats around, you change the need for handholds in different places. And the question is whether you'll have that kind of flexibility as well. It's one of the limitations we have now with the existing rail cars, so that if we, you know, if we decided to go with seats in different places, arranged in a different way, and we say, well, now we need a bunch of handholds at these different points, will we have flexibility to make those kind of adjustments?
From a structural standpoint, we will take that into consideration, that we might have to have a different place to mount. The only other avenue that might come into play would be, say, for instance, like the trim. If we have to drill a hole in a different area, we might have to replace some panels, interior panels. But structurally, we should be able to move stuff around.
Okay. That's good to know. I will also note that in Mr. Kubitschek's presentation, one of the things that was mentioned was there was a lot of input here from the Writers Council. And you had a specific number of things, I think, but you had taken into account a number of things in your, from your discussions with them. And I, number one, appreciate their input. Number two, I appreciate your taking into account their input. I think that's very positive for ensuring that whatever we wind up with in the end will be something that will serve our customers better. So thank you for that.
Okay, thank you.
Further discussion? Motion is by Mrs. Hudgens to approve the design item. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries.
Our third action item was to amendment of the joint development policies and guidelines. And, Mr. Chairman, I move the staff request for approval of the selection criteria for joint development offering integrity and business ethics for board direction and request. And the item was amended, and you will see that, and I wanted to...
Blue item.
Yeah, I'll draw your attention to the blue item with the amended section. And I move for move approval of that joint development.
Second.
Motion by Mrs. Hutchins, seconded by Mr. Benjamin, to approve these amendments regarding integrity and business ethics in our joint development guidelines. Is there any other discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries.
The remaining items were that the joint development small local minority business enterprise guidelines will be deferred to a future meeting, and that the relocation of the WMATA headquarters presentation will be deferred until January 29th committee meeting as and return as an action item.
Thank you, Mrs. Hutchins. With that, if that concludes planning and development, we will move now to the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee. Mr. Graham.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. We met on November 6, 2008, and we have one action item. Mr. Millis sought to obtain the concurrence of the committee and the board on Metro's first Metro Access Revenue A fleet management plan. The plan provides for the acquisition of accessible vehicles to update the aging Metro Access fleet and to support future growth of Metro's complementary ADA paratransit system. I move approval.
Motion by Mr. Graham, seconded by Mrs. Hutchins. Discussion, Mr. Benjamin.
I just wanted to note that as we were told when this was brought before committee, this is for planning purposes only and is not a commitment to purchase the vehicles.
So noted. Further discussion? Questions? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Mr. Graham?
Now, we had various information items on operational performance and public safety statistics, safety performance indicators, and we spent a lot of time discussing elimination of paper transfers. We had a detailed briefing on that, as well as the Smart Trip program update. And that included contract actions, timing of key customer service enhancements, and contractual milestones. I think the bus rail transfer did not involve any action as such, but it had definite consequences in terms of a large part of our ridership, and that there was a consensus reached with staff and the committee and the board members that we would see the implementation of the bus rail transfer in January, having had the final technology installed. It's now installed throughout the region, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct.
So we're going forward with that, and that will matter a great deal to a lot of people. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir, it certainly will. Thank you, Mr. Graham. That concludes committee reports, and will bring us to administrative actions, of which there are three.
Can we move them in block?
Well, I think there's only three of them, and I think there may be one that we want to talk about separately. So. So I will enter the first one, which is a request to initiate and award a contract for police psychological testing, and I will move approval.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Graham. Any discussion? Mr. Cato, is there anything we need to know about this beyond the
Nothing
contract?
Different beyond what's there, and this is a routine process that we're doing.
Any questions? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. The second item is a request to initiate and award a sole source contract for rail car brake assemblies. It's 700 rail car brake assemblies for the CAF rail cars. That's the 5000 series. It's a one-year contract. I'll move approval.
Second.
Mr. Graham seconds. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. And the third item that had been listed, of course, was removed from the agenda and is being referred to committee. The final item is the approval of indemnification of CVS Corporation for sales of Smart Trips cards. And this probably deserves some comment. Mr. Cato, you want to say something about what we're doing here?
Yes, I'm going to ask Ms. Wilson to come up and to talk a little bit about the detail of this.
This relates directly to the issue we've been discussing about greater availability of Smart Trip cards, particularly as we're trying to move bus users to them.
Yes, this is a negotiation that we are in the middle of right now with CVS. The one biggest sticking point is indemnification. And so if the board agrees to move forward with this, we will be agreeing to indemnify CVS for any third-party claims that they would have as a result of the sale of our Smart Trip card. And I know our general counsel can speak more to those specifics. But on the marketing side, if we can resolve this issue, then we can move forward with getting our Smart Trip cards into every single CVS store in the region. And that would bring about 180 to 190 stores, I think 187 stores, which would triple the ability, triple the number of places where you could buy Smart Trip cards.
And if this goes forward, you'll be able to implement it fairly quickly?
Yes, we would expect to have our cards in CVS stores by mid-December.
Okay, which brings, you know, a lot of neighborhoods the opportunity to purchase these cards. Can we assume that this is a template for similar arrangements with other retailers?
We already have arrangements with similar retailers right now. I mean, we sell at some of the Giant stores, and so we could certainly use this as a model. Giant currently sells Smart Trip cards. Not all Giant sell them, but I think once other retailers see the value that this could bring to traffic in their stores, that hopefully we'll be able to expand our reach even further.
Well, I look forward to seeing that. I also think that Mr. Graham's comments in the past about signage come to mind, and generally, you know, having a marketing plan that lets people know this is a place where you can buy these things is going to be really important, because, you know, people don't otherwise think of it as something they could buy there. And secondly, the point that Ms. Iacomini made about from the Writers' Council, that being able to buy them is one thing, but what we really need is the ability to add value.
Indeed.
And, you know, that's another step that we have to be able to take.
And we are in preliminary discussions also, so it's sort of this will be the first step, and then the point of sale units where you could load value, that would be the next set of discussions.
I look forward to a report soon on that as well. I take it, Ms. O'Keefe, that this is fine. I don't want to discuss the issues. I want to know that you tell me it's okay. All right.
Mr. Chairman.
If I had legal questions, we'd be doing that, not in this room. But if anybody has it, I'll move approval of this item. Mr. Graham seconds. Ms. Hudgens.
I think I mentioned before, but maybe not, and I didn't hear it. I had suggested that we all also look further. There are some ethnic chains in the grocery store piece that are, I think, very critical and reach a large population, and you might want to make sure you consider
that. So we will do that.
Right. And if you have any challenges in doing so, I can at least tell you one that might be able to give assistance.
Very good. Other questions? Not. Question is on the motion to approve. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. That concludes administrative actions. Reports. Let's see. Mr. Linton, any report from WSTC?
Not at this time.
NVTC, Mrs. Hudgens.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just simply going to mention the fact of not directly through NVTC, but through the local jurisdictions, that I think a couple of our boards have joined the general manager initiative of speaking to congressional delegations regarding our lease back, and our board approved. I don't know what others have done so, but we think it's important that we all have a unified voice.
Very good.
I'm here.
Question, let's see, a report from the District of Columbia.
Yes, I have a report. I want to announce that we have a welcome problem. You know what welcome problems are? They're very unusual, that's what. But in the District of Columbia, we have a welcome problem because the Friday after Thanksgiving, which is traditionally and historically known as Black Friday, is those of you who live in outside the District of Columbia know, well, we're finally going to have our Black Friday problem in the District of Columbia, most particularly,
why don't we know?
Well, most particularly in Columbia Heights, where we have a retail center, where the Friday after Thanksgiving attracts so many consumers, so many customers, and anticipation of long lines and many, many thousands of people wanting to buy things. The District of Columbia has agreed to open the Metro Rail system 1 hour early. And I want to say that this is very much with the support of the mayor of the District of Columbia, Adrian M. Fenty. We're going to open the system at 4 a.m. That will affect everybody in this room, by the way. And the District of Columbia is paying the tab. So that we want to ask Metro's, WMATA's press, superb press services to help us with this. And we will open at 4 a.m. The cost, which is we are advised is about $27,000, will be sustained by the District of Columbia. And
this doesn't require board action? No board action is required to affect this? Okay.
Okay. Phew. So anyway, I just wanted you all to know that the District of Columbia has a Black Friday. And do you know where the term Black Friday comes from? Does everyone know that?
It's when business gets in the black, I presume?
That's right. If the business goes in the black. And, of course, our businesses in Columbia Heights are already in the black. But we're very pleased to have this challenge.
Tough Thank year for retail sales from everything I hear. All right. Thank you for that report. We will now move into closed session and then return to certify and take up any matters that might arise out of it. I move the board meet in executive session, discuss litigation and contractual personnel security matters and legislative strategy consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6B, 6C, 6D, 6F, and 6H. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Benjamin. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. We are in recess.